It's the Mike Tech Show, show number 355. This show is a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. If it's tech, it's here. Please visit techpodcast.com. Hello, everybody. Welcome to the podcast. I'm your host, Mike Smith. Thank you very much for downloading and subscribing to the podcast. Please visit the main website at miketechshow.com. You can leave me a voicemail message. The phone number is 240-949-2450. And that's also Mike Tech Show, all one word, on Skype. You could send me an email question, and I have a large stack of email to get to. The email address is miketechshow@gmail.com. Also, you can follow me on Twitter, twitter.com/miketechshow. And, of course, Facebook. You can send me a friend request, facebook.com/miketechshow. I have a jam-packed show, so let's get to some announcements, which I covered last week, and I will do so quickly right now. I will be co-hosting Computer America Friday, May 6th. So that's tomorrow night, depending on when you're listening to the show. And that will be at 10 p.m. Eastern Time. And that, of course, I'll be co-hosting with Carrie Holzman. On Monday, May 9th, I will be a guest on the 100th Lou Trek Show. And Lou has been a monitor in the forum for a long time, a long time listener and friend, and I am looking forward to being a guest on his 100th show, and that, of course, is at loutrekshow.com, and that's 7 p.m. Eastern Time on Monday. June 4th, Saturday at noon, the Mike Tech Show meetup. I am finalizing the meetup location this week, so I will post it, I will tweet it, I will Facebook it. When I have the venue nailed down, I will announce it. That, of course, is in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Please, if you can make it, if you are within driving distance, reasonable driving distance of Pittsburgh, please try to attend. It's going to be a lot of fun. And if you are, send me an email so we can get a good count. It is very important that I get a good count if you want to share in some of the giveaways. Online meetings are a great tool for businesses to work smarter. And that's why I always recommend GoToMeeting by Citrix. You can join meetings in seconds. It is so easy. One click, create a meeting. Invite your attendees. They can go to GoToMeeting.com and easily sign in. GoToMeeting supports voiceover IP. It's easy to use their tools to hand off presentations, to mark areas of the screen. You can demonstrate any software, video. I use it all the time. It's a great product for online meetings, and you can have unlimited meetings for one flat rate. You can try GoToMeeting for free for 30 days. Go to GoToMeeting.com, click on the Try It Free button, and enter the promo code podcast. So go to GoToMeeting.com, click on the Try It Free, enter the promo code podcast, and you get to play with it for 30 days. In the news, we have been seeing passwords and account information being hacked and stolen. Of course, the big news, PlayStation, Sony, the PlayStation Network was hacked, and that's been big news. But now we have LastPass has a compromise where they're telling everybody to change their passwords. So the question, and I'm just hypothetically throwing it out there, are there any places on the net where we can store that private information? You know, I always recommend Xmarks for storing passwords and your bookmarks and certainly sensitive browsing information. Can we trust them? what is the answer? So you have to be mindful of this. If we're putting all of our eggs in one basket, you got to be prepared. What if it's hacked? What if it's compromised? And, you know, how secure are they? They tell us a lot of things, preach a lot of things. Are they really doing what they say they are doing? Is Google safe enough? They say they're secure. They say they're not sharing our information. So this brings up a lot of issues that can, you know, we can debate this forever in talking about it. But I just wanted to bring it up just to let everybody know that be careful, take a look, change your passwords often so you do not worry about being compromised. That's all I can say. There's lots of programs out there. I guess I'm concerned about the free ones because how much money are they really putting in their infrastructure in protecting and securing our private and sensitive information? Keep that in mind when you're handing over all this info to store all your passwords. And a great reminder, the chat room today for the show, everybody was sending me links, and Paul LaForge 129 sent me an email before the show, and then I noticed it. It's around, and just in case you haven't, I wanted to bring it up. There's a few changes happening within Google Apps that I want to cover, and I have clients just signing up for Google Apps. I have clients that have been on Google Apps. What's Google Apps? Google Apps, for email especially, is basically taking your domain email for whatever domain it is and for free having Gmail as the back-end engine for your email. It is easy to set up. I've talked about it. Carrie and I talked about it on Tech Vets. We dedicated a show to it. Byer Brown did a video on how to actually set it up. So there's a lot of information on how to do it. It's easy. There's a few steps. Takes a little effort, but you can do it. Well, Google has now lowered the number of users for having the free service. It used to be 50 and under. Under 50 accounts, it was free. As of May 10th, it's going to be 10 users. So if you have more than 10 users, it will cost you $50 per user per year. Keep that in mind. Now, if you already have your account, you've been grandfathered. So that's a good thing. But remember, if you're a real small business and you have less than 10 people, you can have multiple emails that add up to more than 10 by using the alias feature within Google Apps. So let's say for my mhsconsulting.net, which is hosted by Google Apps, and I want a sales at mhsconsulting.net, I want info at, I can literally take my Mike, M-I-K-E at mhsconsulting.net, and I can then create aliases. So now I can have multiple accounts that are automatically going to go to my primary account. So you can have more than 10 addresses and still be within the limit of under 10 users. So keep that in mind. If you add up your email accounts and they come to 20, well, how many users and actual accounts do you have to create? If you have more than 10 users, it is well worth the $50 per year per user for your company. No question. And if you're under 10, great. Now, what else is changing? Is they're migrating Google Apps to the regular Gmail. So what that means, you will now have all of your Gmail apps, all of the services are now going to be available and tied to your Google Apps domain. So my mhsconsulting.net, for example, will now have Picasa and all of the Google services available. They're making that switch this month. Now, you can volunteer to migrate when you log in, and I've done that already on my domain, and the only thing that changed, besides giving me all of the Google services, you now have the regular Gmail website to go to for just logging in. But you now don't log in with just your username. So let's say I'm miketechshow@gmail.com. I could just type miketechshow and I can get my Gmail mail and my password. I type from my user account, mike@mhsconsulting.net. I put my password in and I log in. Where before I would go to google.com/a/mhsconsulting.net. Now I just go to the Gmail login. All of the port settings for your email applications remain the same. And that's good because now legacy clients that I have, I don't have to go around and change. Now I do have to change. I have a client actually scheduled for next Friday. We are migrating to Google Apps. And what I am doing, I'm going to make the change to their MX records. Then I'm going to log into each of their systems because they're going to a different domain. With Google Apps, I just wanted to make you aware of a couple big changes that are happening this month. And if you are a Google Apps customer, you have received the email explaining exactly what's going on. And when you log into the settings for your domain within Google Apps, there's big warnings telling you, and they have great instructional videos and information on how you can do test migrations to the new setup. Gmail gets it right, and they have great explanations and instructions for every step of the way, for everything that you're planning and doing. If you want to migrate all of your email, let's say you have a few clients and they're on a current server and you need to migrate that into the Google Apps, they have a utility that will, a Google update that will take your email from Outlook and move it up into Gmail. It's great. Take a look at all the information, all the help screens. You'll be set. There was one more thing I wanted to vent about, really. See, I said I was going to have all this email to talk about, but I have all these other things. I bought a wireless notebook for a client last summer as part of a big project. And this notebook, a standard Dell Latitude, you know, loaded up, nice size hard drive, 4 gigs of memory, Windows 7, 64-bit. The client did not have to use it for a few months. They went to connect to a wireless network, simple wireless network. They couldn't get in, couldn't connect. I was like, what the heck's going on? I tried everything. I said, you know, over the phone, we were working. She says, look, this is not working. So I came over and I said, let me take the notebook. Let me bring it home and let me test it out and see what's going on. And I just figured I'm going to have to reload the driver or something. Well, I called Dell. Actually, I had my son call Dell. I gave him all the information. And Ryan called Dell. And when he gave them the tag number, they said, there's no WLAN card in the notebook. How can that be? How can someone sell a notebook today with no wireless? And my client swore. She said, it's like there's no wireless in here. And boy, did I have to eat crow. Remember, I sold this notebook to them. Usually there's some magic switch that has been accidentally turned off. Well, that was all on everything. And, you know, clearly when we gave the tag number to the Dell rep, they ran it and they said, there is no card in here. I don't know why, but my distributor and Dell, something happened where this fell through the cracks and there was no card. So can I buy a card? Yes. And it was like $30-some and $7 shipping for something that weighed like a couple ounces. I said, send it. Gave my credit card. They said they would ship. Well, unfortunately, it took almost 2 months for them to get me the card. There was delay after delay. I would get an email. It's delayed. It's delayed. I thought, oh my, I am not good with notebooks. So it finally came in, and it came in on Tuesday afternoon with UPS. And Tuesday night, I sit down and I start looking at the instructions. And the instructions said I'm going to have to remove the keyboard, and I'm like, oh no, oh no. I'm like, where's Steve Cherubino when I need him to like open this notebook up? I found out I was so lucky. One screw on the back bottom of the notebook lifted the whole bottom off, and right there in front of me was an open socket to just put this. It's like a memory chip almost. It was phenomenally easy. The two antennas, I had a little trouble snapping the two antennas, but the one antenna is black, and it had a little black mark beside the on the sticker for the one antenna, and the other one was white. And then I looked at the instructions, and it said, if there's a gray, but there's no gray on the chip, don't worry about it. Just connect the two. And I was like, this is great. The computer gods love me tonight. Life is good. And I plug it in, and I'm all happy. And you see where this is going. I'm just excited that this is finally done. They gave me a CD with the driver. I boot up, I put the disc in, and the driver takes forever to install. It starts up and everything's great, and then it goes about three quarters of the way, stops. I'm like, what is going on? And I get a notification.dll error, okay? So we can't find, or there's a problem loading this notification.dll, and this wireless adapter is the DWL1520. I start searching, you know, what is this error? And the common answer seems to be try reinstalling the driver. Now, funny, after it errored out with the software install, and every time I reboot, I get a notification DLL error on the screen after the reboot, but it worked. Even though I'm getting this error, I'm connecting to the internet with the Wi-Fi. It is working beautifully, but I'm getting this annoying notification DLL. There's no way I can leave the system with that error. So I cross my fingers and I go to Dell.com and I enter the tag number and I get the drivers, Windows 7 64-bit. I look and I see there's the driver for the DWL1520. I download the file. R, whatever, anybody's familiar with Dell, you get R in this number. I double click it, I let it, and it installs this time, and it goes right across, full install. It says it wants to reboot. I reboot, and the error is gone. So what is the lesson here? If the driver doesn't install, especially from the CD, we don't know how old that CD is. Did it have a 64-bit driver properly? We needed the updated drivers. So what I should have done from the first part is, even though there's a CD with your product, and how many times do we know has this happened? You get the CD, go online, get the latest driver, download the latest driver. And you know what? It's going to run faster from your hard drive anyway. Dell downloads. What would it have taken me? Just a couple extra, you know, another minute or two, and I could have done that first, and I could have avoided the problem. That's why I share these stories. So they stick into your, you know, into your claw, into your mind, and as you go forth and do these things, go online, get the drivers, and download them first. Something else. You know, I've been talking about CombiFix the last few weeks. I have seen, and I don't know why, an attack on the print spoolers of systems. There has been infestations that CombiFix has been removing, that the only evidence of an infection has been the print spooler error and the print spooler not working. And CombiFix is going through and deleting files, and there is an infection. When I'm done the infection, it fixes the problem and they can print. So I wanted to get that out there because that's important. CombiFix is my new go-to tool for just helping me on problems that I would not have thought that. I would not have thought that. Let's think about this from a practical reason. Why are they attacking the print spooler? If you have an idea as to why somebody doing evil out there, what are they getting out of attacking the principal? What are they after? What's going on there? I haven't figured that out yet, so I don't know why. There's so many other things that they can do to try to take over your system or get you into buying software, that they mislead you into buying software to clean up your system or whatever. I don't know. I mean, at least those, when they ask for a credit card number, we know what their motive is. What's the motive of attacking the principal? I don't know. That's my stories for the week here. And I want to get to a couple really good questions and some email here. One is from Jorge, and we've emailed each other a couple times on this particular topic because we need an answer to this. And it says, is there a way I can reboot a computer remotely into safe mode? Okay, so think about this. We want to reboot the computer, but when we reboot it, we want it to be in safe mode and still allow us to be able to remote into the computer. So safe mode with networking. That's a great question. Log me in does not let you do that. One of the things, and I knew Small Business was going to say this in the chat. The first thing I said, if it's a server, it's easy. It's ILO for your HP, DRAC for your Dell, and those are cards that allow you, it's a separate network connection, so you go to a separate IP address, and you can literally reboot a server and watch the server reboot. It is an awesome thing. When I managed a very large server environment in the corporate world, it was required. I made sure that you had to have, if we bought a server, it was built into the price. No server would enter the data center, not a data center that I managed, without having a DRAC card or an ILO card. The ILO stands for Insight Lights Out. I'm not sure what DRAC stands for in the Dell world. I'm sure IBM has the same solution, but I don't know what their acronym is. So in the server world, I have no, oh, it's not Insight, it's Integrated Lights Out. Thank you. By the way, it used to be Insight years ago and then changed to Integrated. So that's interesting. So I was with it when it was the SIM. It was actually Compaq Insight Manager, so CIM, way back before HP bought Compaq. After the show, I received a great email from Tim, and he writes, "Hi, Mike, it is possible to reboot a remote machine into safe mode with LogMeIn free. Once signed into the remote machine, but before clicking remote control, choose Preferences, Advanced, View reboot options," and he attached a screenshot of those options, and they are restart LogMeIn, normal reboot, emergency reboot, hard reboot, safe mode reboot, and scheduled reboot. Tim, thank you so much for answering that question, and I wanted to make sure it was included in the show. This email that was sent in, his son's Gmail account was hacked. "My son is a victim of cyberbullying at school. A script kiddie has hacked my son's Gmail account and has changed his password. He had previously hacked my son's Facebook account and changed his profile and picture to something vile." We're getting serious here, everybody. "He has not given his passwords to anyone, and he does use a school-issued netbook that has Windows XP on it. He uses the netbook at home using a wireless network, and at school using the school server and wireless network. My son says the script kiddie has shown screenshots of my son's email account to prove that he is the one that hacked him. We have not found any keyloggers on his netbook. I know I have not given you much information, but that is all I have. I believe that the boy has hacked the school server somehow and is able to capture my son's password when he logs on. Changing passwords seems to do no good. Is this possible? Do you have any ideas how we can combat this? Any help will be appreciated. I am a longtime listener, and I've learned a lot from you. First things first. You mentioned wireless. We're going to get into making sure that it's locked down. There are programs that can check for keyloggers, and you want to make sure, although you think you don't have a keylogger, there could be something capturing your son's keystrokes, and it's very possible. What you need to do is make sure that the wireless is knocked down, is absolutely locked down with WPA2 encryption. Also, make sure that when you're done working on the computers, they are completely turned off. Also, is there any security at school for the wireless? I don't know, but I'll tell you right now what you need to do. You have to call the principal of the school, and you need to have a meeting, and you need to have a meeting right away before this escalates and gets any more serious than it is. This is very serious, and I actually would call the local police, and then I would go in with a meeting with local police representative and the principal of the school. Let me tell you, when you bring in the police to the school will take you seriously. And you sit down and you discuss this. It looks like your son may have, or it sounds like you have an idea of who this may be or what possible group this is. Mark in the chat just mentioned, are they activating the cameras in some of these, which they could be? This is really serious. I appreciate you asking me for help, but you definitely need to contact authorities on this and make sure that alone may scare the perpetrator behind this when they see how serious this is. I don't know. Are they just doing it to rib them and have fun? Or, and let me tell you, that's no way to do this. Bullying and cyberbullying is a serious, serious thing that needs to be addressed immediately. The cyberbullying is almost like taking a kid and beating him up, and now you're just doing it electronically with the Facebook and other things. It is serious. It impacts your child's life, and I know, and by the sound of your email, I hear it in the email. Please contact authorities, contact school administrators, and sit down and have a talk, and they can definitely address this better than I can. Not only from the technical level, but the mental aspect from this and what impact it's having on your son, and they can help with this. Very important. I will take a look and see what I can find on programs that can help you see if there is a keylogger. Certainly installing something like Zone Alarm and getting it onto the systems. This is one of the reasons I'm not a big software firewall fan, but certainly if you put on a program that's a software firewall and the keylogger's trying to get out and send something out, you are going to see that. So you are going to be able to see that kind of activity if something's happening. So programs like that, getting a software firewall would probably be my first step. And then take it from there, changing passwords on a regular basis after you put in that protection and stop things from being transferred out, then transfer the passwords. And the last wave of password changes may not make it to them, the person who's compromising it. We want to check all wireless connectivity. We want to get software firewalls on all the systems. And if I can think of anything else, or if you can think of anything else as you hear this, send it my way so we can pass it on to the listener. Please, if you can, follow up with me, and I'd love to know what's happening. I can't help myself here. This is from Mark in the chat, me, Claudius. He says, thanks for the live demo. And this was referred to last week in the post show. He says, Mike, thanks for the great live virus eradication on the show last week. That was one of the best shows and the best part of the show also. Very courageous on your part. I'm thinking that Trojan looked pretty hooked in. It did. I had a problem with a client, and without giving any of the secure information, I showed the screen of the XP system that had a printer problem that I'm trying to solve, and then found out that it was infected, and I had to clean that, and I did that live on the in the post show. Short of reloading Windows, how can one be sure that the OS files are not damaged or corrupted also? Would running SFC/scan now as a follow-up check and repair the OS? Mark, that's a great idea, but I've had good and bad on that. I'll tell you what I'm thinking. Most live stuff, whenever possible, it is so educational. Thanks, Mark. Mark, great thank you. I appreciate it. Here's what I would do, and I probably should have done. Reapplying the latest service pack, like reapplying service pack 3 and letting it refresh all of those files and then double check key drivers after I do that for any of the hardware. That's certainly possible, but you make a very good point that we don't know what system files, after we've done this great cleaning that with CombiFix or Malwarebytes or Super Any Spyware, we make the great cleaning efforts, and then what happens? We don't know, and we could have lingering problems. The only way to truly know is to reformat and reinstall. That's the only way. Deleting the partition, recreating it, reinstalling it, and reinstalling all the software and loading down the drivers. It's the only way we can guarantee that it's totally fixed and totally gone. But that's a lot of work, and I try to avoid that. And I've been fairly lucky that most of the time when I get the cleaning done, the systems have went on and working. But I will say this. If I see repeated infections on a computer, that's it. Second or third infection, that system, I don't care what's wrong. And this has happened to one client where they called me up and they said, oh, it's time for its monthly cleaning. And I said, no, we're redoing the computer. I'll be down there. It's going to take me 2 hours. I'm blowing it away. I'm reinstalling. I will not do a fourth cleaning. It seems like three's my limit. I'll do the first two and the third. You know, when it hits the third time, that's it. It's time to reinstall. So I think that's what I use as my basis. Certainly, if you have a system that starts acting up and system crashes, maybe some more blue screens, other software not working, and you've just did a cleaning, you know what? Just redo the system. Get all the data backed up and reformat. Make sure you've secured the data. Make sure you understand all the drivers. If it's a Dell system, go to the drivers directory, get that off. Any of the systems, just make sure you get all the drivers, and then make sure that you have all the data backed up. Make sure you've scanned the data so it's clean, because you're going to be putting this back on the system. You don't want to reinfect the system. Scan that drivers directory. Scan the data separately and make sure that you have that all clean before you put it back in. Give a listen to this email here. It's an AD question, Active Directory. I love listening to the Mike Tech Show every chance I get. It has helped me tremendously. Thank you. I am not a computer tech at my day job at a university, but I function as such on kind of an unofficial basis. The IT administration is forcing all the users to now be on Active Directory, and this is causing some concern among the users I assist. Some faculty are concerned about the ability of the administration to look over their shoulder by spying on their computer activity. This raises questions of academic freedom, etc., that get rather complicated. Yes, it does. I have been asked these questions on different occasions, and I don't have the answers. What exactly can the administration do to my data or my programs without my knowledge? Can they access my files? Can they install or uninstall programs? And lastly, can they view my screen remotely while I'm working? Any insights you might provide are greatly appreciated. And thanks for the great podcast. Certainly anonymous here. Yes to all of the above. I know you don't want to hear this as an answer, but in a corporate world, if we make the comparison, when you are an employee, you have no rights on your computer. They can listen to your voicemail. They can watch and read your email. It is not your property. It is the property of the company. And you have no privacy on a corporate system. Now, education, it gets a little different, but what can Active Directory do? Can they change Windows settings? Yes. Can they remotely install programs and uninstall programs? Yes, they can. Can they view your screen without you knowing it? That gets a little tricky. Can they can install a keylogger, or that's something that logs every keystroke, and they can do that even without Active Directory. And certainly, it's not a function of Active Directory, but there's ways to push all sorts of things. They could be doing that now. They don't need Active Directory. Active Directory just makes it easy to be able to deploy things with group policy and the ability for them to properly manage the machine. You got to look at this the other way. It's not that they're trying to spy on you, not that they're trying to do things that you're thinking of, all the evil things. What they're trying to do is lower their total cost of ownership and control support costs. And the way to do that is to make sure that it's easy to patch systems. It's easier to maintain software. It's easier to make it where your system is going to be more reliable. It will lower the times that the faculty and people will call for support. But it doesn't sound like the faculty is thinking in that terms. But you need to educate them and say, look at the flip side. They're trying to save money, which might save jobs from a teacher's perspective. They're trying to lower the cost of the IT support. And one of the ways to do that is to gain more control, lock things down, because the more freedom and the more people can play, the more trouble they're going to get into, the more viruses they're going to have. And make sure anytime you're going to a website, wherever you're at, if you're in a workplace, in a school, you have to assume that someone is watching and recording every website that you are going to. Remember that. Every Google search, everything that you are typing, because now companies, by law and by compliance, have to be watching and protecting employees by having filtering, or at least like WebSense, which is watching all of the sites that you're going to. And those things are being reported on. They have to. Because big companies can be held liable if they are not doing that. If you bring up a pornographic website on your workstation and another worker is offended, and is offended so bad, they can sue the employer for not taking the proper precautions to block that bad website. So companies of a certain size are expected to do certain things for a company that size to protect themselves. So what's the university doing? They're doing what's natural. And this is the natural progression, which is to have the desktops more controlled, more locked down, easier to manage, easier to prevent infections, easier to deploy software, And unfortunately, with that, your freedom decreases. Remember, security is an inconvenience. Secure, the more secure you want, the more inconvenient it will be for you to do what you want to do. Security is a hassle, and you have to go through it in order to be secure. That's why we have long lines checking into airplanes. One note before we start to wrap up here. Recently, Timster, who is in the chat all the time, and he hasn't been in the chat and not today, and it was brought to my attention that his mother passed away. And Timster, my thoughts and prayers, as all of the other listeners, definitely are with you and your mother. And I'm sorry to hear that. I hope you're doing okay. I'm very, very, very sorry to hear that. If you, boy, it's hard to move on from that. If you are buying anything from Amazon, go to miketechshow.com. On the left-hand side, scroll down just a little bit. You'll see an icon to Amazon. And also in all the show notes, at the bottom of the show notes, there's a link to support the Mike Tech Show. Please click on that, share that link, make your purchase. It helps to make a contribution to the Mike Tech Show. I get a small percentage, and I so appreciate that. And thank you so very, very much for your continued support. I want to thank all of you for your support, your listening, your contributions to the show, whether it be financial or whether it be your emails, your voicemails. It's wonderful. I love doing the show, and I look forward to it every week. And I have still a large stack of mail that I haven't got to, and I promise I will sprinkle it in over the next shows. But I guarantee you a good chunk of this email, let's see how much, I will definitely cover on Computer America, and I'll make sure that that audio is easier to get to from the Mike Tech Show, so this way you can hear your questions as Carrie and I answer them, not just me. So you're going to get two opinions on some of these questions. Thank you very much, and I will talk at you same time, same channel next week. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to The Mike Tech Show, a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. Please visit techpodcast.com.